What up, podcast babies? I'm Jessie Oliver.
I'm Maureen Smith.
And I'm Makita Loney, and we're Fat Out of Hell,
a bi-weekly podcast where we burn down fat stigma through conversations about our experiences as bad, rad fatties.
So take out your extenders and buckle up, because it's time to go! What up, podcast babies? This is Jessie Oliver, and I just want to start our episode today with a content warning.
Yes.
Because today we are going to be discussing body dysmorphia. And a lot of people have had body dysmorphia regardless of size. So we just wanted to give you a fair warning that that is what we will be discussing.
Yep. So, how's everyone doing today?
What the people don't know is we just had like a very heavy 45-minute conversation about multiple things. So, I mean, I am doing great. It was just a weird context to be like, I'm great right now.
Hell yeah.
How are we all doing? I think everyone feels completely manic at this point, right? Like,
a little bit.
I got 4.5 hours of sleep last night because I kept, like, I literally woke up so many times thinking about friends of mine who teach in multiple states.
Oh, fuck.
And, like, I have friends who teach in Florida. And, yep. And so, like, I am managing well? Is that what I could say? Like, I'm managing.
I think managing is a good word. Yeah.
Like, but it is a lot, and it's a lot all the time, and it's, you know, we're just, I was saying to someone, and I think this will lead us into this conversation, one of the things I'm noticing, like, yesterday I lost my mind because I was like, wait, we've only been quarantining for 4 months, like, 4 months, because people kept being like, oh my god, it's been, it's been so long, like, I haven't been out in 6.5 months, and I was like, 6.5 months, and I started doing it, I was like, wait, but, like, my last day out in the world was March 13th, and I was like, March to April, April to May, May to June, June to July, 4 months, it's been 4 months, and then I lost my mind.
Yeah.
Yep. But I think specifically, Americans have a really hard time with this concept of quarantine. Partially, we can talk about, like, individual liberty, the construct of individual liberty in America. But I actually think that quarantine is forcing a lot of people to have a reckoning with trauma. And when you have to sit with your trauma, and you live in a society that loves to medicate trauma away, loves to pretend it's not there, loves to put on a face full of makeup and take photos instead. And I'm not saying that all of those can't be viable tools in how one gets through trauma. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think they're used to not engage with trauma. Well, we are at a point where you have to engage with it, right? Like, there's...
Yeah.
Or you're going out and you're doing things that are reckless and foolish. And doing it under the guise of your own liberties at the expense of others. And I just find that really fascinating. The whole construct of, like, where we are as a collective and where we are as individuals. I will say I've worked through a lot of things that I didn't even know were still things to work through. Or am in the process of working through, right? Like, you know, work is constant. But it has been 4 months. And that was like a, oh my gosh, why do people think we've been in this for like 6.5 months? It's been four. It's been four.
I think.
But the construct of time seems to, you know, be wild right now.
Yeah, I think that what a lot of people are realizing, or I think that what a lot of people are experiencing, especially in the fat community, and maybe I'm just speaking for myself here, is that because there is such a lack of out outside stimuli. Like, we're not managing a social calendar. We're not planning vacations. You know, we're not, we're just kind of like working and then not working. And, right. and so I think that gives us a lot more time to kind of fill that unoccupied space in our, you know, processes with just dwelling in insecurities.
Totally.
And I think that, I think that that's where a lot of, I think that a lot of fat people and a lot of, you know, not exclusively fat people, but a lot of people are really kind of like deep diving into their trauma right now. And like, really, I think that everyone's kind of fraying around the edges. And I think that for the fat community specifically, it's coming up in a lot of disordered eating. And
I think the problem is that people aren't deep diving into it. Like, they're not choosing that deep dive. Yeah. They are being submerged into it. So one of those things, one of the things that, you know, has kind of come up in our conversations is this idea of body dysmorphia. We're taking more photos of ourselves. We're taking, you know, like, we're seeing ourselves or looking back at our photos. And I think it's a hard time sometimes reckoning what you believe you look like with what a photo shows you, right? Like,
yeah. Well, it's wild because, so this was a conversation, you know, like we've referenced that we had before we recorded, but like, you look at yourself and you see yourself one way in the mirror. And when you're looking at yourself in a mirror, you can kind of, you can alter your appearance because you have a reference. You know what I mean? You can look at yourself mm-hmm. and you can change your posture. You can, you know, you can do whatever. And then you can decide that that's what you look like and then walk away. And then that's the mental snapshot you have. But then when you see photos of yourself where you're in all different angles, you're in all different positions, you're doing different things, you're in different places, the circumstances are different. Every single picture looks different.
Yes. And for me, I never see myself sitting, which is ironic because that's what I do most of the day for teaching, right? Like I sit at a piano all day long, but I never see myself sitting. And then I'll see a photo of myself sitting and be like, is that what I look like?
Yeah.
And I think people, you know, we have that with voice too. When you hear yourself and you're like, whoa, is that what I sound like?
Yeah. Yeah, it's that outside perspective. No, so my birthday this year was a big hullabaloo because it was like the very beginning of quarantine and everyone felt bad that I turned 30 in quarantine. And so like people like made a video for me and like it was very nice. And they asked that my boyfriend record my reaction to the video. And I was sitting in the living room, actually at my piano, because like that's where my laptop is. And so like it just for a while became my desk, which was great for work-life balance. It was really very good. but I saw the video and I looked so much bigger than I thought I was. And it was such a like stark contrast to how I see myself. Like right now I'm sitting here recording and I can see myself in a webcam and it's how I expect to see myself, you know, like I haven't showered. I don't look great, but it's like, it's an image that I think is expected. But seeing that video footage, I was like, wow, it was so shocking. And it wasn't bad shocking. It was just it was like I was seeing a different person. And it's such a wild experience to see a picture of yourself or video footage of yourself and not recognize that person, for better or for worse.
Yeah. No, yeah, like I went through the same, and it's comforting to hear somebody else essentially sum up how I felt, you know, because I wondered if I was weird for a little bit. I was like, how could I not know that that was me?
Yeah.
You know, like, how do I not recognize myself? Like, is there something bigger? But, like, that's exactly what I felt. Because as we were saying earlier, like, I So for also for Scoppy, me and a really good friend of mine, Amanda, we do Pastel Black, and that's where we do like coverage for conventions, and we talk to other Black nerds in the community and learn about like, you know, what they love about anime and stuff. So when C2E2 and ASIN and all of our neighborhood conventions come back to town, that's where we shine, and we bring out the cameras and we'll do vlogs and all that fun stuff. And this year C2E2 was like so much fun, and I like actually had like my outfits planned out, I was organized, my makeup was done, like I recorded doing all of that, and I remember feeling so confident in the moment. And I guess it's because it's like, it's me as myself talking to a camera, right? So of course I feel how I feel as myself. Right. And I did have the flip finder up just to see like where I, you know, situationally wise, like, and I felt fine then. But last night, it was like C22 was in February. Yeah. And holy shit. And last night, because I had finally gotten like the things that I needed to start like finally organizing and editing and like getting into it. And last night was the first time that I had looked at the footage on a computer in the past, 4 or 5 mm-hmm. months. And when I pulled up all the footage that I remember taking and feeling great about and being like, hell yeah, I did not recognize myself at all. Cause I never see myself in that. Like, I know that like, you know, like cameras and things do like depending on what you're recording with and all that stuff and your angles, but like even with all of that, I did not recognize myself at all for like any of the like recording that I did at home. And I have like other factors as to why that was heightened for me in the moment, but like that's also something that like just me and you sitting down, I think last week we're just talking about like looking through our Instagrams, like I don't feel like I look like myself in this photo. Yeah. I couldn't tell you why. I know I took that photo and I feel fine. I felt fine when I took it and I felt normal when I took it. But now when I look back at it, how the hell is that really me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that there's a misconception in the realm of like fat positivity and body positivity that like if you prescribe to body positivity and fat positivity that you never falter in those positions and that we're like bulletproof. And it's like,
right,
and it's like, you know, it's fun and confidence boosting to hear someone say like, oh, you're just so confident, like you're so blah 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 blah, like it's always fun to hear that people think you're confident, but the reality,
I don't know. Can I just interject yeah. something about that real fast? I think a lot of people use the I think you're confident as a euphemism for, but why are you so confident? Do you know what I mean? Like,
I think it depends on context.
Yes.
Like if like a 13-year-old fat girl comments on your post being like, I love how confident you are, like that's us. Yes.
Then I will be like, sweet angel baby, I love the woman you're gonna become.
Exactly. But like, you know, if like, you know, thin fitness guru is like, wow, you're so confident, you know, like it's circumstantial. But I think that in the best case scenario of confidence being thrown around, it's like nice to hear, but there's a bit of like, I know when I hear it, there's like a little bit of imposter syndrome that happens with me of like, and I think that's, and I think it's okay that imposter syndrome is there.
Totally. I talked a little bit about this on the Libby mm-hmm. episode that we did recently, where I was like, you know, the beautiful thing about body justice and body liberation as a collective and as a deepening for systemic change for fat bodies is that on the days that like I feel kind of crummy about my individual body because I'm close to my period or because I'm just not able to work out the way I like to work out right now, which is literally, I could look zero difference. Like there could be zero difference in the way I look, but when I work out, I feel different. Mm-hmm. Same, and it yeah. and it like rewires how I see myself just because I feel differently about my body. But it's nice, you know, the individual days we falter on how we feel about our individual body. It's nice to know that there is a collective, because we're not all having that day on the same day, you know? So like, if I feel shite about my body on whatever day it is, I can just, you know, go and look at lots of people's photos on the Instagram who are part of the collective mm-hmm. and feel better in general.
Right.
Right.
I will say, I think, you know, I was just unpacking something. My thing with that word confident is it's always been used in place of beautiful.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
And in this conversation we're having about body dysmorphia, part of the thing, when you are told your body isn't beautiful, it's easy to have dysmorphia about it, right? Like, it's like constantly dysmorphic because you're constantly feeling like you have to prove and validate that you are beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then you see yourself, no matter, and it could be even like a really like beautiful photo, and for some reason it reminds you of the things you've been told instead of the things you feel about yourself. And that is a really hard dichotomy and juxtaposition to navigate, that like we are constantly having to undo hard wiring. Even if we don't feel that way, even if we feel a very different way about ourselves, it's like that hardwired circuit just goes, bzz, you should feel this way, you know, right. Like, and then being like, no, 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 no. And then you feel it and it kind of stays with you. And then it feels like your brain is having an argument.
Yeah.
Like, you know better than this, right? Like, and it's hard to constantly be doing that because it's really tiring. It's very tiring.
Yeah. That's the thing that I think is becoming most kind of on the forefront of my mind through quarantine and all of this, is just how exhausting all of this work has become. Like, the constant, you know, the fact that, you know, I can't get outside as conveniently as I used to be able to get outside and just, like, move my body and, like, just, and the kind of reckoning I have to have with myself about that, and the more, like, self-talk of, like, it's okay that you can't do this because you're doing your best, it's okay, just, like, the constant internalized self-talk and self-pep talk during all this time, when I do have all of this, I hesitate to say bandwidth because I definitely have less bandwidth, but I'm juggling less, but what I'm juggling is heavier.
I will say something has happened over quarantine where I've just decided to no longer be quiet about it.
Yeah.
And I think that for me, I totally get that. The juggling less, but the things that are being juggled are heavier. I just sort of was like, this is not one of the things I'm willing to juggle anymore. Yeah. I'm just going to like say what I want to say and say my piece about it. And either you're going to like it or you're not.
Yeah.
But I'm not keeping it inside anymore. Or I'm not being, I don't know. We've all had the conversations where someone has said something and then you become overly tactful about trying to point out why what they said was really hurtful.
Yeah.
And I think there is a happy medium between being a kind-hearted, gracious person and also calling people out on their bullshit.
Yeah. There has to be. There absolutely has to be. Because, like, I... yeah. It's just... it's, and I feel like there's just so much... with everything that's happening, you know, not even talking about fat justice, but with everything that's going on and so much systemic change and so much societal change happening right now, when we can't leave our houses and we can't blow off steam in any other place but the fucking internet, it's like, I think that being kind of like, you know, throwing off any fear of being disliked, we kind of have to just get rid of that. We just have to get rid of it. Yeah. Because there's just too much work to be done. And, you know, there's work to be done in advocating for ourselves, and there's work to be done in advocating for others. And fear of, I don't know. We just need to become less attached to fear.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I do have a question for both of y'all. Yes. So when you recognize that you're in the middle of a body dysmorphia spiral, mm-hmm. what do you do? What are your coping skills?
God, that's a good question. I don't know if I have any. The most that I kind of do is just kind of try to shut down any negative body talk that may come up. And just kind of tell myself I'm fine. You know, you are who you are, and who you are is awesome. Like, in some sort of, like, maybe not those exact words, but just kind of trying to pull myself, like, in a positive sense. Because I know that I can't erase how I feel, but I can at least try to, like, override it with some sort of, like, positivity, which I don't know is the best coping mechanism, but it's something that's been happening to me more recently than not, so it's still fairly new.
Yeah. Something I did recently, specifically when I saw that footage of me on my birthday, was I kind of, like, tried to take a step back from it, and I tried to, like, I looked at the picture and I looked at the footage, and and the main thing was that I didn't recognize myself. And so what I did is I looked for something about myself that I did recognize, and I tried to kind of, like, work out from there. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. oh, I see the dimple you have in your cheek from having high cheekbones, and that is in that picture. That is a part of my body that I recognize and that I love. Okay, let's go out from there. Your face looks bigger than you're used to, but honestly, not that much bigger. So why are you like, it's okay. All right, let's go out. That dress you're wearing is so fucking cute. Live your life. Let's go. Go dress. Like, you know, right. And so just trying to, like, hyper-focusing on something that I do recognize and that I do love and that I do appreciate, and then kind of going out from there and picking apart what about it forced me to have that reaction helped. So, yeah. Yeah.
I have sort of a couple of things that I always go through. I start by reminding myself what I like about myself that has nothing to do with my body. Mm. Then I remind myself all the things I like about myself that has everything to do with my body. I love my ass. I have a great ass. I have an ass that is somewhat problematic to hide, but it is also the reason I can lift heavy weights. It's also, you know, like, the things that I will always love because they're just sort of universally true. I have great lips. I have, you know, like, I just sort of remind myself of that. And then I force myself to invite the feeling to the conversation and be like, why did I feel this? What about this photo, what about this video, what about this position made me feel this mm-hmm. way? What is this kicking up in me, and why is it kicking it up?
Right.
And I kind of invite that trauma or that whatever it is into the conversation instead of trying to just fix it.
Yeah.
Like saying, why are you here? Like, why, what has happened that you're now here? is something is bubbling, right? And then, you know, really trying to think of, you know, I've been thinking a lot about this idea. I do not think we can actually ever achieve body positivity until we achieve a collective body neutrality.
Yeah.
Until we say, like, we no longer, and I mean body positivity, like, for all bodies, not, like, the body positivity we package, you know?
The watered-down bullshit.
Correct. That, like, until we hit a body neutrality where we don't praise people for, like, I'm not saying you can't, like, I love when people who are close to me who know that I love my ass tell me, look at that ass today, right? Like, that's a different thing. You can compliment my ass if you know me and we have that kind of relationship. Like, I don't want it to seem like I'm saying there should be no discussion of bodies. Do you know what I mean? Like, ever? Because that's not it. But I think until we stop saying, you look so great, have you lost weight?
Yeah.
Right? Or shit like that, that is not body neutral at all. Until we stop equating beauty with size and stop doing all that, until we hit a collective body neutrality, we cannot actually be body positive.
Yeah. So,
and so I sort of remind myself of that, and then I'm like, great, this has nothing to do with you. And then, you know, like reminding myself that the feelings I'm feeling, while fair and valid and real, also don't have much to do with me and have a lot to do with what society has told me.
Yeah. Something that has made that fact ring true of, like, the idea of body neutrality and, like, it honestly doesn't matter what your body looks like, is not feeling well. So recently I haven't been feeling well because of hormonal lady issues. So, but I am, through not feeling well, I've realized that I care less and less about what my body looks like and what I'm trying, and more focusing on ways that I can make myself feel better. And it has nothing to do with diet food. It has nothing to do with getting, you know, hitting that new trendy workout. And it has everything to do with just allowing myself to rest and allowing myself to think about what food would make me feel good right now and eat it and not give a shit. And just the fact that I haven't thought about what my body looks like in, like, 2 weeks is, like, I mean, obviously I'm thinking about other stuff right now because I don't feel well, but, like, when I ruminate on the fact that I haven't given a thought to what I look like in 2 weeks is such a relief, honestly, of, like, and gives me hope that once I feel better, I can continue that trend of, like, it does not matter what you look like. Like, you know, you should, I mean, it's, like, fun to feel good and it's fun to feel like you look good. But at the end of the day, like, hitting that neutrality of, can I stand? Or not even can I stand, because that's ableist and weird, but just, like, can I do the things with my body that I know I'm capable of? Yes. Amazing. End of sentence. So that's been a thing that I've been thinking about in terms of body neutrality.
I have come to realize over quarantine and how important rest is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are all people who hustle a lot. Yeah. And I was like, I'm so tired. Oh my God, do I have coronavirus? And I was like, no, I think it's just the first time in maybe years you haven't been booked so solidly that your body's like, I need you to shut the fuck down for a little while. And that also has just sort of changed my relationship to my body.
Yeah.
Like, the idea of how restorative rest can be and how I feel better about myself when I rest.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there have been days off where I just like haven't left my bed, and like I don't remember the last time I hadn't done that since college. I just like had this
vision of you eating grapes in bed, being like, Daniel, bring me grapes.
Jesse, you genuinely have no idea how accurate that is, because I've been on a weird grape kick specifically. So like, yeah, no, there have been days where I'm like, hey, Daniel, can you go get the grapes from the fridge? Oh my God. No, because, all right, I do want to go on a grape tangent, because grapes are great. Grapes are the ultimate road trip snack.
I completely agree.
Because, so, Daniel and I, obviously pre-quarantine, go on a lot of... I hadn't been on a plane in 4 years before I went to Jamaica right before quarantine. So...
You, like, came home to quarantine. Like, quarantine started. I did. While you were in Jamaica.
I did. Literally, it did. It was wild. No, okay. So I'm gonna do a tangent from a tangent. No, because I went on vacation, and it's possible I've already talked about this, but it's so fucking wild. I left the country March 12th and watched America fall apart from Jamaica. And the people... The tourism industry in Jamaica is, like, so embedded in, at least in, like, we were in Negril, which is just, like, tourism is so essential to that, specifically that part of the country. And so everyone around us was trying so hard to be, like, chill and, like, not really talk about it. But, like... Less and less things were starting to be open, and we were just like, fuck, like, this is bad. And just like, I was in Jamaica watching the footage about how O'Hare, the international terminal, was like
a ghost town.
No, was like 7 hour waits.
Oh, yeah, because yeah. they were doing travel bans and making
you're right.
And actually they've traced a lot of the spread of the virus to that specific thing, because even though they were doing temperature checks, high temperature is a sign of corona, but not one of the main signs. So there were a ton of people who had the virus who were passing temperature checks, who were then sitting in planes or sitting at the airport with people. And especially London was a hot spot, and they were all flying from London to the States because they had closed. They were going to not let people in after that weekend. I mean, it was a disaster. I mean, the whole handling of this has been a disaster, right? Like, yeah. So, but I can only imagine, like, I literally, like, went to the gym the morning of the 13th, went and voted, and by the time I got home, it was like, well, you're never leaving your house again. Oh, great. Oh, sweet. Okay.
Yeah. No, like, I was getting texts from friends, because it was wild, because we had really spotty internet, but we all could receive texts. And so there was like one spot in the place that we were staying that like we could plant a computer and get okay internet. That was the only place. And so we would take turns like getting internet. And I just remember watching these videos of people at the international terminal and being like, that's where we're about to go. We're about to go there. Oh my God. And then like getting texts from people being like, hey, what kind of food do your cats eat? The grocery stores are nuts right now, and I want to make sure that they have food when you get back in case the stores run out. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? Are you serious?
I mean, I will tell you, I bought a Kula cloth, which is like a pea cloth that you use when you go camping, which I've converted to forever and ever more. I love it so much. But I was like, oh, you bitches all bought all the toilet paper? Fine. I will go a more sustainable and ecological route with a pea cloth.
Oh, my God. Holy shit. No, like, it's wild. It was so... anyway, so I hadn't been on an airplane.
I feel like the podcast just actually got a glimpse of what our real life conversations are like. So I want to point that out to you, podcasters. Usually we try to rein it in a little bit.
That is the most real thing
that's happened.
Oh my God. Yeah.
We just went from grapes to like a global fear.
No. So yeah, but yeah, grapes are great in the car because they're really because there's no peels. There's no cores. You just pop them in your mouth. I mean, there's the sticks or whatever. What are they? The vines? Yeah, whatever. The sticks.
But like, I kind of have a rule that like anything that is biodegradable is fine.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you could keep it in your car and throw it away, or like even throw it out the window you're not by other cars, right? Like it to whence it came,
right? No, and like if you wanted to be super eco-friendly about it, you could like take the grapes and just like wrap them in like, you know, those like reusable kind of like beeswaxy things, the cloths that are like beeswax.
You could
like wrap the grapes.
I plan on buying some whenever I move, wherever I move,
right? Yeah.
I'm in the don't buy anything until you move, Jesse.
Yeah.
Phase.
I will say, disclaimer though, I did peel grapes as a kid.
Ooh.
With my teeth.
So
okay. I was weird.
So I
did you eat the skin or did you like?
I ate the skin. Like, yeah.
Okay.
But like I liked because it was so thin.
The so membrane.
So I would sit there and then like peel around the grape and eat the skin and then eat the flesh.
I kind of love that. I don't know why I love that, but I feel like that's very, like, sensory, and that makes sense.
Well, so I peeled a grape recently and was so dissatisfied with the experience. Because I had a grape, and I was like, and the skin was kind of peeling, and I was like, I'm going to peel this off, and I'm going to see what it's like to eat a fucking peeled grape. And I bit into it, and I think that I like the snap of a grape.
Yeah, no, me too, hands down. It was just fun to peel them.
That's why I really love cherry tomatoes.
Mm.
I love cherry tomatoes.
Get that little snap, that little crunch.
See, for me, I don't like cherry tomatoes because I don't like cold tomatoes.
Love a cold tomato.
Because I think that I associate cold tomatoes with like mealiness.
Ah. I mean, I get the mealy thing is hard. Like, I cannot have a mealy apple.
Oh, God.
Like, if I take a bite and it's mealy, I'm like, I feel bad about throwing this away, but I also do not want to eat it. Ah, that is something I will say. Again, this is now traveled from body dysmorphia, but I think there is a congruency here. Growing up really poor, like throwing away food is like
the ultimate sin.
Correct. And like sometimes when you just don't like, I think, you know, it's part of the reason, you know, fat people, we have a lot of struggle with food, not in the sense of most thin people's perception, but in like our relationship to food, because we've spent so long having food be our enemy, right? That like, but like there's also something to be said about when you are poor and food is a scarce thing. And that food scarcity and how it relates to how you view your relationship to food and also how you view your relationship to your body, right? Like, which comes back to the body dysphoria
thing. Yeah. No, I think that.
But I love a cold grape, just not a mealy grape.
No, I think that like as a kid, the idea of like needing to finish your plate or like needing to, because like, and this is so I was really fortunate as a kid and like didn't grow up in a house where it was like you need to finish your plate, you need to finish your plate, because my mom grew up in that kind of house and she hated it, where like there was just like food that she didn't like and she wanted to have the option of not eating it, but she was forced to, and so she was like, I'm never, so I didn't grow up with that, but a lot of my friends did. And it's interesting, like being out with friends who did grow up with that mentality of like the clean plate club being the end all be all, whereas I'm like, if I don't like it, I'm just not gonna eat it. And it's like, it's an interesting, it's like a baby step into intuitive eating.
Yeah.
Of like, I don't like it, so I'm not gonna eat it.
It took me a long time to be able to pick up an apple, know it was mealy when I took a bite and say, I'm throwing this shit away.
Yeah.
And not eating it because I felt like I had
to. Yeah. No one should have to eat anything that they don't want to eat just because they're told. There's no have to. There shouldn't be a have to.
I although the problem with that, I will add the caveat, is when food is so scarce, there is a have to. Like, you just wouldn't eat if you didn't eat the mealy apple.
Right. I think like in terms I think like in terms of like the hierarchy of needs, like once you get past scarcity, there shouldn't be a have to, but scarcity does need to be acknowledged.
Totally, yeah. Totally. Oh, friends.
We've gone from body dysmorphia to grapes to apples.
To cold tomatoes. Oh my gosh, I will tell you. cooking in an unair conditioned apartment.
Oh.
Like, one of the things that's happened in quarantine, right, is that we're all cooking more, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the oven has become literally Diablo in apartmento, where I'm like, every time I turn this thing on, because I have the type of like old Chicago apartment where the windows have been painted over so many times that I actually cannot open our kitchen windows.
Oh, God.
So, and there's no air conditioning except for in my bedroom and in my teaching studio. So there's no air conditioning in the kitchen and the windows can't open. And so you turn on the oven to 425 degrees and your whole apartment on the back half of the apartment is like 425 degrees.
Ugh, fuck that.
I just like sit there sweating, being like, I'm gonna eat food.
Sustenance.
Oh my God. Holy shit. We have a pretty small apartment, and so we have one window unit in our living room that cools down our whole place, and it's such, but the other side of it is I don't really use my oven. I pretty much only, if something needs to be like baked, I'm using quotation marks, which is podcast cold, I use the toaster oven.
Oh, I mean, I just always think of your partner in the baked ziti. Your partner loves a good baked ziti.
Yeah, he does. He does love a baked. He does love a ziti. No, we actually haven't had ziti in a really long time. Mostly because, so the only exception to our lack of oven use is our weekly Sunday dinner, but we haven't hosted Sunday dinner since March. And so we haven't really used our oven since March. I mean, we'll make the occasional like cookies or something, but that's super rare. I don't know. Well,
oh, quarantine.
Well, do we have any final thoughts? Yes. Okay, you go first, Desi. I know you usually go last, but this time you're going to go first. I know.
I'll go first. I want to just remind people that in the work of body liberation, you will always have days that are hard. You will always have days where you have some sort of dysmorphia kick up, and you will always have days where you just don't feel the greatest about yourself and your body. And that that is normal, and we should normalize it, and we should acknowledge it, and that it's okay to talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
My final thoughts are that you, like, if you have a moment of body dysmorphia where you're looking at an image of yourself that you just don't recognize, or whatever medium in which you're feeling that way, just, like, start small. It could be the smallest thing. It could be your eyelashes. It could be the shape of your eyebrow. It could be, you know, a dimple in your cheek. It doesn't matter. Just focus on something that you do recognize and just go out from there and figure out what's bothering you and, like, forgive yourself. Because the fact is, like, no matter what you look like right now or ever, it is your body's way of self-preservation. You know, like, the fact is you're here and you're alive and you're going through life. And if your body looks like it, it looks like that, that's okay.
Snap, 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 snap.
I will self-snap. Snap, 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 snap. Keita, do you have any final thoughts?
I do. Sorry.
Were you thinking about grapes?
So I put myself on mute. Sorry for the tangent. Because I was coughing a little bit, I was like, oh, okay, I'll just put myself on mute. And so I yawned, and I'm getting over an ear infection. Oh, God. So when I yawned, it popped real hard.
Oh, fuck.
And as soon as Maureen asked if I had anything to say, I was just in the middle of, like, oh, I was, like, screaming off mute. God. It's fine. My final thought is to take care of yourself in whatever way that looks like for you. Just being gentle with yourself, even though most times it's, like, easier said than done. And if that does look like some dumb face mask, do it. If that looks like drinking boba tea and binge watching an anime that you love, do that. Or if it feels like crying forever, you can do that too. As long as you feel like you're taking some sort of good attention and care to you and your body and your soul and all that good stuff. And I'm about to take an hour-long shower to do so.
Look at you.
Hell yeah.
All right. Well, y'all, we love you.
We love you.
We love you, podcast babies.
We do.
Bye.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us on all the social media places as Fat Out of Hell Pod and all the podcast places as Fat Out of Hell. And you can shoot us an email at fatoutofhellpod@gmail.com. Bye, babies.